Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to the Toolnauties podcast. I'm Timmy. This is my co-host, James. And today we have a very special guest, Mike Yolden. Mike is 24 years of age, and he's going to talk about his experience with mental health issues and addiction to alcohol and drugs and how he's getting on now in his life.
Yeah. Nice one for having me on the show, Mike. Boys.
You're more than welcome. Thanks for meeting us up in Churchfield. Thanks for having
me. Delighted to be here and delighted to get a chance to speak about my journey with mental health and my journey with addiction and stuff. I feel like it's a topic that's not spoken about enough and it should be spoken about more.
And where are you from yourself, Mikey?
I'm from Ballyfeehan originally.
Ballyfeehan?
Ballyfeehan, south side. Oh. A lot better than the north side. Lucky I came up here, to be honest. But from the south side originally. I grew up my family home, my mother, my dad, my two brothers, my mom and dad always done everything for us, they gave us everything, I grew up with there's no addiction or anything in my original house, in my house at home, but I did have people close to me that I'd see on the regular that would be struggling with addiction and stuff, and struggling with it, and I could see that, And from a really young age, I kind of took on the thing that, I was always going to try help them, I'd see them outside the pub, and they'd be like, don't tell your dad this, and I'd be like, all right, and I wouldn't go home, and I wouldn't tell my dad and stuff, and that's been down for years, seeing them in states and stuff, I said I was never going to be like them, but in the back of my head, I kind of looked up to that lifestyle a little bit, Kind of looked up to that gangster, as I call it, lifestyle, sunglasses at 2 o'clock on Christmas morning, Christmas day, That kind of thing,
And we can definitely identify with that, It's just being attracted to the negativity.
100%.
And kind of having them type of people up on a pedestal. Me and Timmy talked about that at length. Yeah. So, have you any siblings?
I have two brothers. I have one older and one younger, Sean and Chris. Again, no problem with drink. My little brother now, Sean, he's a Thai boxer. If he drank three times a year, now it would be max, he's 22. I think he's 22. Yeah, he's 22. And my older brother, Chris, he gave up drink for when he was doing his college, for 4 years in college, he just gave it up. Mm-hmm. And now he's qualified as his master's of architecture, But obviously, I wasn't the two boys,
You weren't allowed to play up to there. The older brother, the architect.
I don't have to play up to anything, Nah. I just myself, and I am me, and that's it, But, I suppose I only started getting into, drugs. I didn't get into them too early, because, I think a big thing for me since I was young was an ego, a big thing for me, And, when I was young in school and stuff, I got into boxing, Because, after doing so much work on myself and stuff, talking to so many coaches and stuff, I kind of realised that I needed this ego of being a boxer, this kind of stuff, due to the fact that I was always the smallest in my class, I was always the smallest in the situation, and I used to think I needed to prove myself to people, To prove myself that I could look after myself and stuff and I never even thought of this now until I was working with counsellors and stuff throughout. And now I can see it happening. I can see it coming up, this ego thing, so many times in my life, even still today. I trained kind of a good bit throughout my years. So I didn't really get into drugs until I was about 16 or 17. Started off smoking joints with the lads on the weekend. Nothing major, drinking every now and again and stuff And before I knew it, it went from smoking weed one day a week to smoking weed 7 days a week to taking pills at the weekend to taking coke at the weekend to taking any drug I could get my hands on, And within the space of a year, I was gone from smoking a joint once on the weekend with the lads to taking drugs every day of the week, 7 days a week, and drinking 7 days of the week.
Was it causing trouble for you at home?
It was causing trouble for me at home because, again, as I say, my dad knew the situation in the story with drugs, like, and he could see it from a mile away, but my mother didn't, like, do you know what I mean? And I was playing the two of them off each other, like, and to be honest, like, I done some horrible things to my family under the influence of drinking drugs, and I done horrible things to them to get money and other things for drinking drugs. You know, like, I started to hate myself, like, as a person, like, I started to hate the person I'd become on drinking drugs, do you know what I mean? Like, I stole from them, I punched them, I'd go missing for fucking weeks on end, and I didn't care, like, do you know what I mean? I didn't. And due to all this, and due to the excess of drug use and drink use, I started to hate myself, like, the self-hatred really kicked in, like, I hated myself, I hated who I'd become. The dark thoughts started, the negative thoughts started, the self-hatred, the guilt, the shame of everything I'd done. Mm. And what did I do for this? I took more drink, and I drank more, and I took more drugs to try to suppress how I felt, to suppress what was going on in my head about how I felt about myself.
Yeah.
I thought the only way was to drink more and to take more drugs.
That's normal, isn't it? It's to suppress all those feelings. You're just going to take more. You know, the body at this stage now is getting kind of addicted to these substances as well and chemicals, you know.
Yeah.
So it's a completely normal thing to want more and more and more. I could definitely associate with that.
And I think you say something very valid there as well. You know, when people look at 16, 17, 18 drug user, they think, oh, he's selfish or hedonistic or he doesn't give a shit about anybody but himself. But you're talking there about, yeah, you did live a lifestyle like that, but there was a lot of guilt and a lot of shame and self-hate. Like, we do internalise that stuff. Like, when you are taking drugs and causing harm to your family, it might look from the outside that you don't give a shit, but you actually do, and it drives you into deeper drug use, doesn't it?
You can't talk about it. You can't bring yourself to talking about it. Like, you can't, like. You just... It's an ongoing battle of chasing your fucking tail with drugs, like, do you know what I mean? Like...
Yeah. You have the image as well. You have this image to live up to as well, particularly if you're one of the boys, like, and you build up this form of reputation for yourself.
100%, like...
You think to drop an identity, you know, that kind of macho identity.
Again, another ego, like, do you know what I mean? Another ego. Do you know what? I could get drugs in a lot of places, and, like, if someone asked me for them, I'd make sure to go get it for them and stuff just so I'd have that fucking ego of me selling drugs, you know what I mean? This kind of shit, like, might get a small bit for myself out of it, whatever, and stuff, like. But, like, the more I took drugs, the less I cared about where I was getting the money for the drugs, who the fuck I owed money to, what trouble I was going to get myself in over taking these drugs when I knew I wouldn't have the money to pay for them. I didn't care. And I got myself in some situations with some people over that, get a hiding, and I wouldn't care. I'd do the same thing again the next day because I needed them. Like, I thought I needed them. I thought I needed two sweets and a joint to walk down to the shop and get a fucking packet of skin so I could come home and smoke more. I thought I needed a bag of coke so I could go out and talk to someone. I thought I needed a drink just to fuel every day. And, like, I was working throughout this period for a little bit, like, and, you know, I was working in a few jobs and I'd take more coke in the day than I'd make in the day's work going in there, like. And this went on for a long time and I thought it was the normal, like. Taking drugs and work, drinking and work, freaking out and work, fucking off, being unreliable, like.
Yeah.
It escalated fairly fast, didn't it? You know, the drug use, you know, from when you started initially then to where you are now, really.
In the space of a year, I was gone from one day a week to seven. One day to seven, in the space of a year, and, like, you don't even see it. You can't see the progression, like.
It just creeps in on you, like. I remember back in, you know, before the heroin days in here.
Yeah.
We were all kind of working, and we used to meet on a Thursday evening, and it used to be called Thirsty Thursday, and we'd all get a bag of cans each and drink outside when the boys is gaffed, you know, and have a laugh, you know. Yeah. Then when heroin started coming on the scene, we started, you know, after the few cans, we'd be snaking off, getting bags of gear, and smoking it on the tinfoil. So after a few weeks of that, then the cans, before we knew it, there was no more cans. It was just fucking...
Right.
And the Thirsty Thursday turned into Tinfoil Thursday in about 5 or 6 weeks. And before you know it, everybody just started doing their own thing. And, like, it's only looking back then, you're looking at how it just creeps in, you know, and you're oblivious to it until you're actually strung out in the desert, and then you're looking back and saying, fucking hell, I actually had no awareness when that was actually happening. It just creeps up on you like it escalates.
100%.
Definitely, it's the same with cocaine. Yeah. Like, I didn't need drink to use cocaine. It was the same as yourself. I was going to work, I had a coke habit going to work. And you're going out there and you're probably getting paid, anything between €100 to €150. And you're probably putting €300 up your nose in that few hours. You know, and you're going around the place then and you can't even look at whoever you're working with. I could never make eye contact with people after cocaine. You know, and I never knew the effects of the cocaine to... Like, I start my mental health either. I start to get really paranoid. You know, you spoke about it there. You did it, 2 tablets in a joint to go out to the shop. I couldn't even go out to the shop.
Yeah.
You know, I couldn't even answer my phone towards the end. You know, because I can really associate with you. You know. But anyway, go on.
So, like, yeah, do you know what I mean? The drugs kept coming. The drink kept hitting. And my mental health started to drop, like. The dark thoughts were there for a while. And then I came to suicidal thoughts. Suicidal thoughts every now and again, to suicidal thoughts every day, to numerous suicide attempts. Like, I remember there, after 1 or 2 of my suicide attempts, like, I've tried to hang myself, caught myself, overdosed, the works, and I'd wake up the next day from it, and I'd say, you can't even fucking kill yourself, right, like. And even to say that now is tough, like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it's how I felt about myself at the time, like.
What age are you at this stage, Mikey?
20, 21 years of age, like.
You're a brave man, Mikey, and I'll tell you that now straight up. Yeah. You know,
like, there's no... 20 years of age, I wanted to take my own life, like. And I saw no other way than to take my own life. And I didn't see any way out, like. I didn't, like, I thought that was the way I was going, and that's the way it was going in, like. And, do you know what? It was actually my last suicide attempt. Do you know, I was in my friend's house. It was downstairs. They were all gone. And I looked across and I seen what was there. If I took them, that I wasn't waking up, like. You know what I mean? And I opened the full pack. And I took the 100 tablets. And I didn't ring anyone. I didn't text anybody. I didn't ring fucking Tom, Dick, Harry. I didn't even know. I didn't want to even know. I just wanted... I thought that was the only way I'd get away from the thoughts that were going on in my head. I thought that was the only way I could get out of my head and out of the dark thoughts and out of these suicidal thoughts and away from myself, like. And I woke up 14 hours later and ended up in intensive care. The whole inside of my stomach line was after coming up. They had me on a list for a liver transplant. You know, and I was up in the hospital every single morning. I was there, my parents at the end of my bed, like. Every single morning, like, and...
They must have been heartbroken.
But I was shouting and roaring at them, like. I was telling them leave. I didn't want them here. Do you know what I mean? I didn't. And after everything I'd done to them over the years and stuff, the shit I caused to them, the shit I caused the fucking house, the trouble I drew on the house, they were still there for me. And I had a few friends come up to me and visit me, like, and I couldn't believe it. There was people there that actually wanted, do you know what I mean, that cared for me, and they'd come up and see me, and they were asking things, because this was a few days now, this would have been the first few days in about 6 years that I hadn't had drinking drugs in my system, like, these few days, like, and I was crying up there every day, and I still wanted to kill myself, and I didn't want to be there. I was telling nurses I didn't want to be alive, and it was up there in the hospital bed where I made the most important decision of my life, like, do you know, my dad mentioned to me about treatment. So I didn't know what the fuck I was getting myself into, like, do you know what I mean? Like, I thought I was going to something like jail, do you know what I mean? Sorry. I thought I was going to be up in my room. I come down from my count session and I go back up to my room and that was it, like. But by fuck, I got a shock when I went down to Table Lodge, like. My God, like.
Do you know why I'm laughing? I was the exact same as yourself. I thought I was going in. I thought I was like a car. I was going in for an NCT and I'd be able to go back out and I'd be normal. I was in for a shock as well. I got that shock as well. You know, I they opened my eyes up to the effects of the family member,
you know, the effects of all my madness, the chaotic behaviours and stuff on the people close to me, around me, you know. So that's, I just wanted to say that, you know, because I completely associated with what you just said.
Yeah, and you were talking there about not being able to imagine, or, you know, having, needing a couple of tablets to go to the shop, and I was totally like that. Like, I could never imagine being able to function in life without some sort of a Valium or a Xanax or something in me to help me, to give me the strength and courage to go to a shop, because I was so full of fear and anxiety that if I didn't have them tranquilizers in me, it was just, I could go into a shop sober and get a panic attack or fucking run out, you know. I often ran out of a shop, or if in city centre, I wouldn't dream of it, you know, unless I was medicated. And the thought of living a life without that medication, it's just, I couldn't fathom it. But I was so miserable on the medication, and I didn't see a way out. There were suicidal thoughts there for me too, and sometimes I acted on it. But you know what, we're very lucky that we weren't successful. And like yourself, I was able to get into a treatment centre too. And for people that's watching, that's in the place you were, I was, and Timmy was, where you're on drugs, or maybe you're not on drugs, but you're in a place where it's just dark, you don't see a way out, and you feel like ending your life. There always is a way out. There's always a way out. But you won't be able to do it by yourself. You will just have to link in with somebody, mention it to somebody. If you feel like you're going to take your life, just say it to somebody. You never know what would happen. And you were lucky enough that you didn't die, and you managed to get into Table Lodge. So for people watching, what is Table Lodge like, and on a day-to-day basis, and how did you find it?
So, like, Table Lodge, like, again, as I said, I didn't know what I was getting myself into when I went down, like, and I went down, and Table Lodge, to me and for me, it brought routine into my life. Do you know what I mean? Up every morning to meditate, you go down, you all sit, you have breakfast together. They put a structure and routine in your life. And, like, the first few days I was down there, the first few weeks I was down there, I was still suicidal, I was still, I was about 48 kilos, I was yellow in the face from the sodium the hospital pumped into me, and I was crying every day. And I didn't want to be there, like, I didn't, like. But I was down there. I remember on the second day, down there, you know, you have to tell your story when you go down, like, so, like, you just introduce yourself to the group of people, and you say a few words about yourself and whatever. When I was down there, there was fellas writing fucking A4 pages about themselves, and up the front, talking like they're in the fucking opera, like. And then it got to my turn to do mine, like, and I was sitting up the front shaking, like, and I said my name, and, you know, I mentioned my buddy's name that passed away a few years back, like, would have been my best friend for a long time, and I mentioned his name, and I burst out crying, and I couldn't finish my story, like, I couldn't get it out, like, and, like, I just,
take your time.
It's quite hurt, like, do you know what I mean?
Take your time, boy.
Just bringing it back, like.
Yeah, that's normal. That's completely normal. Why I often, Jesus, James, I tell you, I laugh and be on the show there, like, I'd be having a snake. Do you know, it's normal. Yeah.
It's just showing, like, you know, when you're in treatment like that and the drugs are taken away from you, you're left with the reasons why you're using. And it's just, like, we use drugs as a way of medicating ourselves so we don't have to deal with this stuff. But there comes a point in your life where the medication stops working and it's time to just hit it head on. And in treatment, we all cried, and you know, we're all going through tough times, and but it's the safe place to do it. Do you know what I mean?
100%.
And you're well supported in it.
Yeah, like down there and stuff. Like, do you know what I mean? The first week passed, and like I was still not opening up. Like I couldn't bring myself to. Like, do you know what I mean? I couldn't bring myself. I thought it's not the cool thing to do to talk about how I'm fucking feeling. Like, do you know what I mean? I can't do that because people will wind me up over that, and couldn't bring myself to talking about what was actually going on for me, and I was just making myself worse. And like, I suppose throughout the week or two down there that I started listening to people, like, do you know what I mean? Like, I started listening to people opening up about what was going on and stuff from, like, and I remember when I just started myself to even say a little bit about how I was feeling on that day, like, and I went up the stairs to bed and it was like a fucking weight lifted off my chest. And I'd say it was about 2 weeks in where I said, I'm going to give this fucking thing a go, like, do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I'm going to give this a shot, like. And I got out of bed the next day and I went down to my fucking counselling session, like, and I started to talk about little things, like. I couldn't bring myself to fucking talk about, you know, like. Mm. I was there and I was trying my best, and every single day I got a little bit about what was going on inside my head out. I felt a little bit better at night. And that progressed on, like, you know what I mean? Like, and I was able to speak about more things, and I was comfortable speaking about more things. Might have a cry when I'm talking about it, but by fuck, I felt better that night, like.
The power of talking to someone is unreal, isn't it?
It's crazy, and, like, that's something I missed to say there as well, you know what I mean? When I was suicidal and stuff, like, I couldn't bring myself to opening up. I couldn't tell anyone about this, like, and like, from the treatment and stuff now, like, it's, you have to talk to someone, like, I don't even think it has to be someone professionally trained. Once it's someone close to you that you can, you trust, that's your first start, like, do you know what I mean? Like,
and even if you don't have somebody like that, Samaritans, Pierre House, there's
Pierre
people.
Pierre House, 100%.
They'll all listen.
100%, like, do you know what I mean? That's it, like, talking, it's fucking...
It's essential.
It's weird how it works, like.
You know, if someone, like, there is always help there. It's just, like, myself and James, one of the main reasons for starting this podcast was to let people know that there are services there. See, when someone is struggling with their mental health or caught up in addiction, they can't see past the fog of whatever's going on from what's keeping them in addiction. But there are plenty of services there for people suffering mental health addiction. They're all over the city. It's just, you just need to kind of tell people and ask people for a bit of help.
100%.
You know? That's the key, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
Asking for help, like.
But I think another point you brought up there when you were in treatment was the structure to your day that you had. I remember when I went to treatment as well in St. Francis Farm, which is a different type of treatment centre, yeah. But essentially you have a structure to your day. You're not allowed to lie in bed and wallow in it all day. And I remember my first couple of weeks up there, you know, I'd be lying in the bed depressed and didn't want to come out of my room or didn't want to get dressed, whatever. And my counsellor, John, used to come up and he used to kind of prep me up, like. And he was a small kind of man, but he was a bodybuilder in his days. He was built like that. And he was there, stand up now, James, stand up now. He said, and say this to yourself, in spite of how I'm feeling today, I will show up for life. In spite of how I'm feeling today, I will show up for life. You can feel what you want, but your feelings don't have to drive your behaviour and don't have to rule your day. Feel it and go about your day, and you get control. And over. Because I was driven by how I felt was how I went about my day. If I was depressed, my day was going to be depressed.
Yeah,
I tell you, it was the best piece of advice I ever got. Because, no, like, you can't go about your day being ruled by your head, by your feelings. You know, like, there's days where we don't want to get up, we don't want to go to school or work, or we don't want to shop for life, but you have to, and it's about gaining control over your head.
Why leave 10 seconds of negative thought affect your whole day, like, affect your whole week, like.
Yeah, and that's what we used to do.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. I can still do it. I can still do it today, to this day, like, I can still do it, like, and I just have to catch myself and I have to fucking snap myself out of it. And it's okay to do it, but once I have the awareness of when I'm doing it.
The key for me about this was, and I've spoken about it before, is... When these thoughts come up in your mind, you know, whatever it is, be it shame or fear or guilt or whatever, when they're there, you're going to feel the emotion that's going to come to that. And what that is whatever experience you had in your life. Say, for instance, I done something to someone years ago and I felt a lot of guilt over it. So I had the thought, then I start feeling guilt, right? Next, all of a sudden, my mind... To justify this feeling, my mind is starting to think of other guilty thoughts of other stuff that I done to other people and the guilt. And what that is then it's strengthening and strengthening. Right? So what helped me there to stop all that, because I could go for 2 weeks. I lived my life like that, constantly in the negative pattern, spiraling down. And what I done was through meditation, I strengthened my awareness and I was able to catch these thoughts and hold on to the feeling, then when they come after the thought, and just watch them and stand back. It's like the observer. You know, I don't know, it might sound like a lot of mad stuff to some people, but that was how I learned. That was how I learned, because I wouldn't be very, I wouldn't be your guy that would start reading books and stuff and retain information, because I couldn't make it, because I was always in survival mode, you know. Always kind of full of the adrenaline to survive, you know. So that was my method. That was my method. You know, I know James is kind of the type of person that he retains information and he's able to understand it and move forward with that.
I think Timmy used meditation not to gain an awareness and get an understanding of how he was and being able to manage it, whereas I didn't really use meditation, but what I used was kind of looking at philosophy and sociology and psychology and understanding me, my behaviour, my community, the world, and it just helped me understand like that it's not all, I'm not a broken person, you know, I'm a product of my community, my environment, and I have my flaws and everything. I don't know, just education helped me, meditation helped Timmy, and everybody find something. So if we can just pick it up then when you're coming to the end of your terrible lodge, did you have your aftercare or did you go back home? How was it?
So like, you know, I was talking about terrible lodge and stuff there, like, and the way I say it, I started opening up and I started feeling better and stuff. It wasn't all plain sailing down there, like, do you know what I mean? Like, it wasn't, like, it was tough, like, they break you down to build you back up again, like, bringing you in for fucking family meetings with your family and stuff, like, and everyone's crying in there and then you feel worse again about yourself, but it's just breaking you down to build you back up. And like, when I was in Table Lodge, like, they suggested to go to secondary treatment centre to me because I was young, like, do you know what I mean? Like, and that this would fucking, the way I looked at it is, it was like, if I went to the secondary treatment centre, I was going to be fucking cured. That's what, in my head at the time, that's what I thought was going to happen, like. And I got out of Table Lodge anyway, and I went back home for a while, and I remember I came home, and I couldn't leave the gaff, like, I didn't tell anyone that I was going away, like, I was going to treatment, not that anyone fucking, so I came out of treatment, and I had more texts for bags than I did for fucking where I was, what's going on, why did you disappear off the planet, like, do you know what I mean, and that kind of, I really found out who my friends were, when I came out there, like. But I done my assessment for Fellowship House and I got into Fellowship House, which is a secondary treatment centre in Cork. And like, it was supposed to be three months in Fellowship House, like, and as I said, you know, I thought I was gonna be fucking cured, like. I was like, this is, someone suggested this to me now to do this, I'm good, I'll be as good as cured then, like, do you know what I mean? And like, I was there and I was tipping away at Fellowship House again, like, and you know, Fellowship House, like, is, it gives you a bit more freedom than your first treatment centre, like, you're allowed out in the evenings for meetings and stuff, like, and I ended up going to the bookies instead of a meeting, gambling, like, and gambling was never something I was into before, really, but I needed something, and I got asked to leave the treatment centre after a month over gambling, like, again, Mikey making a mistake, like. I remember sitting outside the door of Fellowship House crying again, being like, you fucking failed, like, do you know what I mean? You fucking failed again, like, look at you, you've done it again, like. Because in my head at the time, it was, I got through this and I'm cured, like. And then I'm sitting on my step with my suitcase next to me, like. I'll never forget that failure I had that day, like. Do you know what I mean? I wouldn't, and like, instead of again fucking sobbing and how I felt, like, I got up and I got on with it and I went to two meetings that day. Narcotics Anonymous meetings, which I had been introduced to within the time I was waiting to get into Fellowship House from Table Lodge. I was able to contact people I'd met in these meetings, and they brought me to the meetings, and I went to two meetings for every day for a fucking long time, like, do you know what I mean? Now my routine was gone, like, do you know what I mean, of treatment centre, getting up, doing everything and stuff, like. So, actually, funny enough, I came up to Churchfield Community Trust. A friend of mine that I'd met in meetings was up there and stuff, like, and because I was after getting thrown off one C scheme with Fellowship House, I wasn't allowed onto the next C scheme. But I still went up every day. I wasn't getting paid for it, but I still went up every day to find or to get a routine for myself. Do you know what I mean? I was getting my dole, whatever, like, I owed my fucking bollocks, so I wasn't really getting my dole because all that was gone back to what I was paying off, like. And I was up in search of the community trust, and like, I didn't have to be there, but I needed routine in my life. Like, I took a little bit from what I learned in the treatment centres I was in, that I needed it, like. And up in Churchfield Community Trust, I met one of my best friends I know still today, like, do you know what I mean? And he introduced me to martial arts. while I was up there, and he brought me training, and Mikey had found his new addiction then, like, do you know what I mean? Like, every single day, I was actually bunking Churchfield Community Trust then to go down to train during the day.
Before you go on to the martial arts part of your story, which is a big part, I just want to let people know Churchfield Community Trust is a charity here in Churchfield for people in Cork City that are in early recovery or have come from prison, and they do kind of... do training and education for the 12 to 18 months job, isn't it?
100% yeah, I wasn't on the scheme.
You're on the outreach.
I was on the outreach.
Yeah.
And from that then I ended up getting on the scheme from that.
Yeah.
But like, again, they introduced routine to your life.
Yeah.
There's counselling there if you want to see a counsellor. There's computer courses, there's woodwork courses, there's gardening courses, there's trips. You're again surrounded with like-minded people. It's a stepping stone to coming from institution to our treatment centre to the real world again, it's the big bad
good,
world.
It's like a very good support for people in early recovery that may find it hard. Like when you said you went home after coming from treatment, a lot of people just go back into relapse because they're back in the same environment.
People's
the same
places
people.
And things like
this. But if you have the likes of a fellowship house or a church free community trust or some aftercare, you can be minded and support through the first year until you become more confident in your recovery. Now, you touched on one thing that was very important there. You started looking at gambling when you were in addiction. Gambling was never something that you wanted to do. But now that the drugs and drink was taken away, the gambling becomes attractive. And it happens a lot where when we come into it, when we put down the drink and the drugs, other stuff starts creeping into your life. And a big thing that happens, people in early recovery that they don't really talk about, is sex and pornography. And I'd seen countless fellas being dragged back into addiction that started with going on with women and girls, going on with men, and just filling the void that drugs filled with relationships, you know. So, and it can be gambling, and it can be spending, and it can be work, but it's just about... you know,
something you obsess over, like,
exactly.
And like, I've gone through a lot of them, like, from dating apps to fucking social media to fucking buying clothes for myself to fucking, it's just an escape, like, trying to find something to escape again, like, always something, like,
do you know where the penny dropped there as I was listening to your story there? And something really stuck out to me. You remember fellowship through your other house and you were sitting. That's when it all changed. That was your moment. That's when you knew you had to do this for you. That's what just stood out for me. Like, you went to two meetings that day instead of going to gambling and little bookies. Like, for me, that sounds like similarities. That knows like what happened to me in a cell when it the light bulb went off in my head. You know, I think that's very important for people to understand and to remember when it actually stopped, you know, because no one was catching your hand then anymore.
No.
You were on your own, you had your suitcase, and here we go. You went to two meetings that night and you started doing things then for you. You know what I mean? You weren't doing them just staying in fellowship house anymore. You were doing them for Mikey, because you knew Mikey wanted to live a better life. You know?
100%.
But there's a time in your life, and it doesn't even have to be for people in addiction. In all of our lives, you're not happy with your life. There'll come a time in your life where you're met at a crossroads and it's like, right, Mikey, James, Timmy, right, James, you can keep doing what you're doing and live a miserable life, or you can do something different. And that's what you were met with, and Timmy and me and anybody that's looking to change their lives, that's what you're met with. And like, at the end of the day, it comes down to a personal decision. Like, you can't get somebody into recovery. You have to want it. And you were at a stage where it was like, even though you're after getting fucked out of the treatment, you still wanted it and you made it happen.
100%. You have to do it for yourself, like, do you know what I mean? Like, I couldn't be... Remember there, like, I was like, I have to fucking do this, that, the other to make my parents fucking proud of me and this stuff again and stuff, but, like, I need to do this to make this person happy. And I was like, when I actually stopped thinking of all that and I was like, right, I'm going to do the next step, best thing for myself, which... and then we'll pass on to the next best thing for my family, for my friends, and everyone around me. And again, when I realised that, like, it was just the next step in my recovery, like. And
tell us about your jiu-jitsu, so how you got into the martial arts.
So, like, there's a jiu-jitsu club there. It was in Blackpool at the time, and a few members of Narcotics Anonymous were training there and stuff like, and they brought me down, and you know, I trained martial arts when I was young, like, never jiu-jitsu, just boxing, like, but, like, I got into it, like, and again, I got obsessed, like, do you know what I mean? I really got obsessed with things, like, and it's, it was a place I could go, and I was out of my head, because, like, although I wasn't drinking or taking drugs, I now had to deal with what was going on in my head, you know what I mean? I had to deal with what was going on upstairs, like, without suppressing it with drinking drugs anymore, like, these thoughts just don't go away when you stop the drinking drugs. So jiu-jitsu and training with the lads down there was the only time I could get away from my head. It was an escape for me, but it was a healthy escape, and I was working on myself physically, mentally, and I still think, like, if I didn't end up going out to jiu-jitsu with the lads when I did with Barry and Ben, like, that I wouldn't be here clean and sober today still, like. What the boys done for me is crazy, like, do you know what I mean? And, like, I'll be forever grateful for them for that, like. And they know, like, I keep saying to them, they give out to me now for mentioning this now, but, like...
That's okay, Mike.
But, like...
You also have to give yourself credit.
Yeah.
Seriously. You have to give yourself credit, boy. Because you had it within you to get where you are now, you know? You just need... We all need people to help us. We can never do it on our own. Some people think they can do this on their own. It's impossible. We all need someone just to encourage us to... Just give us a hand when we need a hand. And give us those few nice words when we need them, you know. Mm-hmm. Tell us, do you know what, you're worth it. You know, keep going, you're worth it. You deserve a good life. You know, we all need somebody to give us those comments and to be able to, at times, to give us a load of shit. Basically fuck us out of it because we're not doing what we're supposed to be doing. Like.
Yeah.
You know, you have to listen. And this is a vital thing, you know, for somebody that's in early recovery. Their head is still messed up. So whenever you are struggling, if you can't get to a meeting, pick the phone up. We spoke about it before the podcast. Picking the phone up is absolutely vital.
You know, it brings us back to talking to someone. Mm-hmm. No matter what stage your life at, talking about someone, about what's going on for you inside, will help. Does help. People just need to actually do it. Like, you know what I mean? Like, jiu-jitsu, like, training with the boys, like, remember I got to travel to fucking Lisbon and all, like, do you know what I mean? Like, my first holiday in years, the last holiday before that was Amsterdam, and I don't remember much of it, like, and I remember I was, like, a child at Christmas, like, and then 2 weeks beforehand, I didn't even have a passport sorted, so I had a passport, but it was just my picture page, all the other pages were ripped out due to other things, like, so I had no passport, so I was rushing around to get a passport and stuff, and I remember I was on that plane, and I was, like, a child, like, do you know what I mean? And I got over there and I started competing, like, do you know what I mean? I actually got bronze in the Europeans that time.
Brilliant.
Over there, and I've travelled to different places since, and I got silver in the Europeans at Blue Belt now in Nogi last October. And these are all just things that, like, a year and a half previous, I was in a treatment centre, and a year and a half, I only was training a year and a half of this, like, and I go over and I get second in Europe doing it. Like, I asked the fella, that I beat in the last round. I was like, how long are you doing this? He was like, 6 years or something. Like, it was just like, you know what? And it was due to true jiu-jitsu and stuff and true martial arts where I could actually be proud of myself a little bit. Like,
yeah.
Because, like, I'd be big into giving myself abuse. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, you're not doing good enough. You're doing, you know, that's just something I struggle with and I accept that. But, like, true jiu-jitsu and true competing and true doing bits and pieces, like, I could actually say I was proud of myself, like, which is something that I hadn't said in a very long time before that day and before I got competing. Like, I'm proud of myself. Because so many times we say, oh, even if you fucking forgot your keys now to go to the car, you go, oh, fuck's sake, what you do that for?
Mm.
What are you, you forgot your keys 30 seconds ago and you get them and go back. But the way my head works is I'd be giving myself fucking shit over doing it. And that can happen every day, like. And we're just built at giving each other. I give myself shit all the time. And that's before anyone else gives me shit, I give it to myself.
I can source you have that, Mikey, in a big way, boy. And that's the truth. If I drop something on the floor, even just something, if I I'm in a cast now at the moment, and if I'm bringing the cup of tea from the kitchen to the front room, and I spill it, my self-critic goes straight in. you can't even bring a cup of tea in. You know,
that's the word I was trying to think of, critic, but I'm pretty good at big words.
Like, self-critic. Yeah. It's just trying to become more aware of that self-critic and just understanding where it comes from. You know, the self-critic, where it actually stems from. In my case, it stems from early on in childhood and different areas, you know. And that's where it came from. And the perfectionist.
100%.
You have to do everything right. Everything has to be 100%. You know, everything doesn't have to be 100%. You can be good at a job and do it well. But, like, the worst part of it is if you give yourself shit because it's not perfect. And that's the perfectionist and the self-critic. I think they go hand in hand. You know, so I can really understand where you're coming from that way. And a lot of people have that.
Yeah, but it's just, again, accepting it, like, we have it and deal with it, like, do you know what I mean? And, like, that's something I'm still working on today, like, is that little self-critic, little fucking small Mikey going on up in my head, like, do you know what I mean? Something I'm still working on today, like.
And what's the plans for the future for you?
So, like, do you know, when you brought up perfectionism there, now I was just going straight and chatting about my work, like, because, like, I am a fucking perfectionist when it comes down to everything, do you know what I mean? Like, I obsess over things and it's like another fucking addiction. Like, I just get hooked on fucking things like that. Like, and you know, I'm a chef by trade. Like, I've been chefing since I was about 16, on and off, like, different fucking thing. But, like, do you know, recently I started through COVID-19 and the lockdown and stuff. Like, just so, do you know, the first 1 or 2 weeks, like, I had no job left over it. And I was in a very dark place in my head because my routine was gone. And again, I stick to routine. Big time, like, as in, like, you talk to my friends there now, like, I'll be here at this time and I'll be here at this time and I won't be a minute late. Like, I just have my days built up in routine. Like, I know what I'm doing for the whole day before I get up that morning, do you know what I mean? And that's just using what I learned from treatments. And but my routine was shot when this whole COVID-19 thing came in. I had no work, I couldn't train, I couldn't do anything, and I was in a really dark spot again in my head. So I was like, I need to do something. And I started, something I always wanted to do was share my recipes and my food with people. And over COVID-19, lockdown and stuff, I started to do that. And, like, again, I don't know how to edit. I don't know how to do voiceovers. I don't know how to use a camera. So I took fucking pictures of each step of what I was doing. And I wrote. I took the pictures when I was cooking. I saved them. And then I wrote them all up afterwards and I put it on my story. And then I put up a post of the recipe and stuff, like, and I started doing one every day, like. And it just blew up. Do you know what I mean? Like, I went into lockdown with less than 2,000 followers on Instagram, and due to putting up pictures of my dinner, I got at one stage 13.5. It's after dropping back now, but since I haven't been consistent, like,
change up your menu.
Yeah, it's just time again. Now I'm back to the real world, but, like, do you know, like, I improvised on something when my head was in a bad situation to fill my time, and by doing that, I was helping people cooking. I had people from all over the world sending me pictures of what they have taken from my recipe. People in Australia, Germany, America, sending me pictures. And I was fucked up over it, to be honest. Like, because, like,
you couldn't accept it.
I couldn't accept, yeah. I couldn't accept it, like, that people were getting something for what I could do. And people were actually getting something and enjoying what I was able to give out. And since lockdown, like, my head has changed a little bit, like, do you know what I mean? Like, I was over lockdown as well. I started selling cheesecake pots and I donated money to pay the house from what I sold and stuff, you know. Sorry. Just because, like, again, like, I didn't use pay the house's services, like, but I use services like that, like, and I see where I am now today from that, like, so I said I wanted to do something for them, and then I donated the money, the profit for the first 2 weeks, cheesecake selling them and stuff. But after doing the selling things and doing things myself, I was like, I can actually do this, like, do you know what I mean? Like, so I'm actually in the middle of setting up my own company. Scary, like, it's very, very scary.
Like a ready-made meal type of company,
so,
is it?
Like, I want to use my background in nutrition and food with my training and lifestyle kind of thing to make, like, tailored meal plans for people, but not just a meal plan on a piece of paper. I'll actually cook the food as well.
Oh, yeah.
And, like,
what's the name of that company going to be, Mikey?
I don't know, but
Mikey's Meals.
Mikey's Meals?
I haven't slept now for 3 days. I'm thinking of a name for this though.
Do you know what? So it'll come to you.
That's
Mikey.
It. Like, I'm not rushing. Yeah. I'm not rushing it. I have an awful habit. I want the things. I'm wanting it now. So I don't want to rush this. Do you know what I mean? And I still have a job as well that I'm going to keep doing, and I'm going to do both of them for a while. I'll continue to do both of them. And I think I need to do that I need to put in the extra hours to appreciate what I can actually do and what can I do in my spare time that I would only be sitting down in my, do you know what I mean? So that's kind of why I want to again. And again, it's a project for myself. It's a goal for myself. A big thing for me is setting goals, lads. I don't know, I remember when I came out of treatment first, my first goal was to buy a pair of Air Max. One of them was to buy a pair of Air Max. I was saving away money every week. I bought my pair of Air Max, and now the goal I'm working at the moment is opening my own business, going out as a sole trader, and that's in less than 3 years, And that gives me fucking goosebumps to think what I can do, or what anyone can do with a small bit of a mindset change and a small bit of a lifestyle change. And when you put your mind to something, what you can achieve.
Mm. It's when you put down the drinking drugs, you've endless possibilities open to you.
100%.
And things that you thought you'd never do, all of a sudden they become, you know what, I actually can do that.
I have a care, jobs. The last job I was in before this one was my first job I left.
Yeah.
For myself. Every other job I got fired from.
Yeah.
Even that to me was something
Mikey, your story is amazing. Really, it's coming through and to be sitting here and to talk to us, and I can associate with a lot of your story, with the mental health issues and stuff. And one of the big things as well is to point out is the age that you were when you put down a drink and a drug. There's a lot of young people watch this show as well. Have you anything to say to the young people that are watching this show in terms of thinking that they're too young?
I remember when I was going into treatment, I was I'm fucking 22, I don't have a drink problem, I don't have a drug problem, it's a fucking phase. Boy, fuck, it wasn't a phase, it doesn't matter if you're 16 years of age or 60, fucking 70 years of age. Drinking drugs, if it's affecting your mental health and affecting you as a person, it needs to stop, it does. And the amount of suicides and stuff that's going on in people my age and younger and stuff at the moment, down to drinking drugs, do you know what I mean? It's crazy, and it's a topic not spoke about enough, at all, anyone young out there that thinks they even might have a problem with drink, drugs, if I know you, if I don't know you, drop me a message,
How can people contact you, Mikey?
Through Instagram, at Mikey Olden is my Instagram, and I put up everything, food, mental health, training, healthy lifestyle, all over that. And I've had people message me that I've never met in my life, and I've spoke with them, I've guided them in the right way and stuff. I can't fucking work miracles, but I found the people I could relate to most when I came into recovery first are people in this closer age to me. There wasn't much of us there, but I could relate to them because it was the same age as them and stuff.
Mm.
And it was only further down the line where I could start actually appreciating the experience that the older lads had and stuff, and it's just a learning curve.
Yeah.
But talk, open up, anyone young, anyone old, you have to speak up about how you feel, if you feel good, if you feel bad, if you feel shit, talk about it. Mention it to a friend, mention it to Pieta House, Martins, you can get their numbers online, you can ring them, mention it to someone, and I guarantee you that you will feel a little bit better afterwards, and every time again you speak about it, you will continue to feel a little bit better. I'm living proof of that,
And
I suppose it's very important to just get over that little bit of fear that you have of speaking to someone.
Yeah, and it's just about opening up and just leaving yourself vulnerable. And
I suppose it's the fear of, you think you're the only one thinking like that, do you know what I mean? You think you're the only one thinking like that, that no one has ever thought how you're thinking right now, and it's different, and you'll be vulnerable if you speak about it and stuff. Drop all that.
Yeah.
I guarantee there'll be someone out there that's thinking the exact same as you. I realised that when I came into recovery and you chat to people in meetings, and I thought I was the only one that ever done this, or the only one that this ever happened to me. And there's 13 people in the room there that the exact same thing has happened. They're coming over saying, I relate to that, I remember that. And it's just every time that happens, you're I'm not alone. And I find once you get into your head that you're not alone, and no one is alone out there, like, do you know what I mean?
You become part of something then, don't you?
Comfortability, uncomfortable, yeah. Like, and then it's crazy, like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, and look, if people want to contact you, we leave the link to your Instagram in the description of the podcast, whether it's on Spotify or YouTube, whatever, and they can go and follow you, hit you up with a direct mail and what have you, and you'll link in with them. Anything else to tell?
No, just want to say thank you very much, Mikey. It's been a pleasure having you here, like, and you've been very, very honest with your story, you know. And that's the only way to be, you know. You won't believe how many people this is going to help, particularly young people, and not even young people, other people that are suffering mental health issues. You're going to show them that there's a way back. It doesn't have to be. You just have to ask for the help, you know. So, and I just want to thank you for coming on and being so honest about your story, you know. And me personally, I can associate with a lot of your issues that's gone on for you, you know. And from what I can see, you're gonna go very, very far in whatever you put your hand to, because you have the energy and you have the drive, and I wish you all the success.
Yeah, and I echo what Timmy was saying there. And just before we finish, I'd be very keen on tasting those cheesecakes.
I'll drop them up with you on Thursday.
Do, why not, Alvaro? Thanks a million.
Boys, thanks again for having me on. Like,
oh, thank you.
You're more than welcome.
Do you know, it's a topic that's not spoke about enough, like, especially within young people, as I said, like, and I'm blessed and grateful to have the opportunity to share a bit of my story. And if one person gets something from what I had to say today and what yourself said today, like, that's job done, like, do you know what I mean? If one person gets it, like.
Yeah, well said. And, well said. Right, thanks again, Mikey.
Thanks, Mikey. Thank you.
Myself and Timmy. We'll see you next week, lads. See you later.
Thank you.
That was good, wasn't it?
Mikey.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And UnitedHealthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.